I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by IoT.next. I'm pleased now to welcome Nico Steyn to the podcast. Nico is CEO of IoT.next. Nico, good to see you again. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks, Duncan. It's been a while, but actually not been so long ago, but good to have a chat again.
So it's been just about a year now since Vodacom acquired IoT.next. They acquired, if I recall correctly, a 51% stake in the company. Yes. How has that gone, and what has been the impact on the company?
Yeah, so I think it is interesting. I think, you know, we've had the debate often in terms of Vodacom acquiring. I think from our point of view and from theirs, it was always going to be a strategic investment. It really has been, and I actually said it last week, you often hear about these types of deals going down and people having mixed emotions post that. I feel from our perspective, it really has been great for us. I think it's actually surpassed some of my expectations. So I certainly am very, very happy with where it's gone. And I think it is fulfilling a lot of the strategic intent that we had when we initially did the transaction with Vodacom. I think it's delivering on a lot of that right now. So all in all, it's been an extremely positive experience for us.
Well, it's good to hear. In the interim, of course, we've got a global pandemic on our hands, COVID-19. How has that affected IoT.next, and what does it mean for your prospects as a business?
Well, look, Duncan, I mean, it's obviously a different world right now. It's a crazy world in certain aspects. We have really just been super blessed and very, very fortunate in that our business is actually flourishing. So even throughout COVID, we've had some of our best sort of deals happening during this time. What I do see, though, is I think that COVID as a pandemic, And the effects that it has had on business has really made leaders become aware of the fact that this kind of thing can happen. And I certainly think it's going to be, really going to be pushing the lever in terms of people really having to get into this world of digitization and transformation. So I think historically you see a lot of these organizations, industries, they've had some digitization in there, but the reality is, if you don't have people on site, a lot of these operations have not been able to work. And actually, some of these should be able to have been able to operate. So I think we are seeing an urgency and almost an understanding that this layer of digitization needs to come, and it's more real than ever before right now. So I think this manifestation that we've seen taking place actually for us has been quite positive, because I think it has reinforced a lot of what we've been saying, obviously, over the last 5 years.
So it could actually be counter-cyclical for you guys as companies look more at digital transformation and those conversations become more urgent. It could actually be a net positive for you in the short term.
Yeah, I think I think it's more than the short term. Mm-hmm. I think, we're talking a lot of to a lot of businesses right now, and everyone's revisiting, certain parts of this business, or of their business. It has been interesting. I don't know how you found it, but I mean, we have certainly, from our perspective, most of our people are working from home right now.
Yeah.
And I think it most probably stays that way. So we will still have sessions for collaboration. But as far as the developers go, the innovators go, we believe that there's a lot of innovation that takes place when people are collaborating with one another, but you actually get great tools for that now. Mm-hmm. And I just think, it's been an eye-opener for me, because historically, I'm wired that way, so I want to be able to see, touch, and feel people.
Yeah.
But now in our world, it's not always necessary. It is interesting how that impacts buildings and occupancy inside of buildings. And then obviously the IoT, it plays right into the hand, because if you're having a piece of space, office space, you need to be able to maybe optimize that and do that more intelligently now, because people are going to want and have more flexibility. So we're saying to guys, you decide how you want to work. Just let us know a week before so that we can do our space planning. And if you have you want a system to be able to do that. So some really exciting innovation that's coming into that space and really playing into our sort of field right now.
Yeah, yeah. For those who don't know IoT.next, maybe summarize for us in a few sentences what it is you guys do. What's your speciality?
Yeah, so first of all, we're a bunch of crazy guys that got together 5 years ago. I had absolutely no idea what we were getting into. In retrospect, most probably wouldn't have done the same. what we have been able to do over the last 5 years is really create a layer and a conversation, I believe, that's been leading a lot of the thinking around IoT. We haven't been the biggest. I mean, we were a startup. Literally 5 years ago, we started. We were a very small team. That team has grown exponentially. In fact, 50x or times 50 in terms of if we take the first, you know, we were five guys who started out initially.
Yeah.
But I think where we are right now is, you know, we've, from the beginning, we believed that IoT would move into a world of distributed compute. And we see, and, you know, we, from the beginning, we were adamant and intentional in terms of our strategy around building technology and intelligence around the edge. And if you go and have a look at the big symposiums about 4 years ago, everyone was talking about cloud, big data, and smart sensors. Today, everyone's talking about the virtual edge, the actual edge, and everything in between. So that really, I think, is something that we've been able to get it right. And we're perfecting and keeping on pioneering into that space because, you know, I think as IoT proliferates, so does the requirement and need change in terms of how we handle data, where we handle that data, and what we're doing with that data. And certainly, we're seeing AI and machine learning. We're starting to plug that into what we're doing, and it's just unbelievable the shift that's you know bringing about. So really, really, some super exciting and fantastic times that lie ahead.
Mm-hmm. So you really help companies make sense of the data that's coming in from their IoT devices and integrating it with their legacy systems to produce information that's valuable to help them grow their businesses. Am I summarizing that well?
Yeah, so that's actually the question, right? Thanks for answering it. I can get too passionate about this, but yeah, that's exactly what it is. We're in this world right now where everyone's deploying some form of digital, creating different forms of data. And what we really do, I think, very well, we do a lot of things, but one of the key things that we do is bring the data together and get that interoperability. Obviously, the complexity, you know, it sounds real simple. Mm-hmm. The complexity is when you're working with operational equipment in the field. All of these things speak different languages at different frequencies in different volumes. And how do you normalize that? How do you harmonize that? How do you bring intelligence onto that? So it really is extending, I think, also in terms of where we were initially and really where our business is transforming to, is now bringing valuable business insights in, you know, as a layer on top of this data aggregation that we do.
So you founded about 5 years ago, and you received funding along the way from an organization called Talent 10, and that helped you expand outside of South Africa's borders, I think, into Europe and the US. Maybe take us through a bit of that history that before the Vodacom acquisition happened. What were some of the growth phases you went through?
Yes, so I think, you know, Talent 10 was sort of our initial funder. Our founding funder came in right at the beginning, really came in on a limb and really set us up to start the business. In that process, we then saw here's an opportunity for real, you know, we're onto something here. And we secured a sort of a Series B round. And that really helped us to expand into markets, the US and into Europe. And then obviously got to that point where when you're, you know, funding that through a RAND-based environment, you know, you'd really need to look carefully in terms of how you do that. So what we've realized is, listen, guys, we've really got a great product. How do we get global reach? And we try to go through the traditional channels, you know, partner programs with some of the incumbents, the multinationals that will have these great programs, and we work quite nicely with them. But obviously Vodafone was top of the list for us in terms of ticking the box in terms of global reach, connectivity, and access to customers. So, you know, for us, you know, connectivity is key in the world of IoT. So having a partner that has that as well as access to customers and global reach, that for us was a massive, massive win.
How did the Vodacom deal come about? Did you approach them? Did they approach you? What's the backstory there?
Yeah, so, I mean, the reality is, you know, Shamil came to our offices for a demo. In fact, William came. William Mzimba, who is the, I think he's the ex-CEO of Accenture.
That's right. He's now the head of Vodacom Business, yeah.
Yes, Vodacom Enterprise. So he got onto us and you know, William's almost, you know, very, very creative and visionary about stuff. So he came in, had a look at us, and then on the back of that, you know, Shamil arrived in the next session. And then we got talking. At that point, we really weren't, I was trying to get Shamil and Vodacom just to do business with us. I didn't feel that it was the time to pull the trigger on a deal, and certainly 51% wasn't, certainly not even close on the cards. But then if anyone's had a negotiation with Shamil, it is an interesting one. And, you know, he painted a good picture in terms of how this thing would work. And, you know, a lot of people, when we did just post the transaction, they said, how does it now feel to be part of a bigger corporate, et cetera, et cetera. And, I reserved comment, but I can say now, it's almost a year down, it really has been good, because I think what you must probably going to be seeing, and you're already seeing it, is, you know, Vodacom and Vodafone transforming their business. Mm-hmm. You know, they're moving also, and it's a big animal, and it's not easy just to move it. But obviously, you know, there's real intent in terms of where they're going to take those, you know, that business. And I believe that we're part of that spearhead right now. So what it has allowed us to do is to really collaborate well with Vodacom into their customer base and with Vodafone. We have some huge projects going down with Vodafone globally right now. So locally and globally. And it's really, you know, so that's the backstory. So Shamil sat there, said, I don't want to do business with you. If I'm going to do business with you, I need to be able to have a stake. And I said, no, please, Shamil, can't we just do business? And Shamil said, no, you know, we think we need to do a deal. So Wayne from Talent 10 was there, and he sort of had a discussion with Shamil on the back end and came back to me and said, look, if we do the deal with Vodacom, they're happy that, you guys continue to run the business, that we continue to innovate, because we were scared we were going to lose that. And not only lose that, I mean, ultimately you destroy the value of the company when you do that. And you often see that when bigger corporates buy smaller startups,
yeah,
they get assimilated, and then, you know, you lose the culture and the value of that business. I mean, I was actually part of a transaction like that in my previous life. So I just really didn't want to go there again. But we've been fortunate, and Vodacom have really been a great partner from that perspective, that we've been able to move ahead with the business, and they've been quite supportive.
Okay. And you remain pretty independent of Vodacom.
Yeah, we're very independent. What we are trying to do is make sure that we bring marketing, planning, strategic stuff. We're trying to bring that together, so that we don't replicate and duplicate. In terms of how we run our business operationally, you know, it is hands off. We run our business the way that we do. We do business with whoever we want, which includes some of Vodacom's competitors.
Right.
Ultimately, I think what we're doing here is building a technology business that, you know, in a sector that's set to, you know, be huge in the future. And I think that's the shift that Vodacom has been able to make, is to say that, well, this is not about owning the network. This is about getting technology to enable the network.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Vodafone, I presume, was very supportive of the deal as well, because you've spoken a number of times now about exploring and exploiting opportunities within the broader Vodafone group worldwide. So I presume that the deal enjoyed the full backing of Vodafone group as well.
Yeah, you know, so that's the, you know, that's the beauty. The one thing that we didn't get right is, you know, that we Vodacom said, because, you know, when you're a startup, you can't afford to go into long protracted discussions, especially when you're on a steep curve for, you know, innovation and expansion. You're kind of burning the cash. You need more cash, or you need to button down the hatches and drive profit. And really what we were doing is driving market share, driving innovation, because there's still a lot of headroom in terms of where this market can go and where this market can move. And I think from that point of view, it was very clear to us that, you know, what we needed to do here, and in fact, no doubt, we often had the discussion, myself and Wayne from Talent 10, it's, you know, no doubt that we've got a good business. The question is, can we make it a really great business? And then you have to have a different view in terms of what are you chasing right now? And what does that 5 to 10 year plan look like? So if you're looking to become a really serious global player, you've got to do some, you know, some things right. And certainly what you need to be looking at is to see how you expand into the global markets. So Vodafone's been key for us, will be key for us in the future. We're working very, very closely with them. There's some exciting, really exciting developments that are very close to being announced with us and them. So watch the space, and we'll give you the scoop. All right. How does that sound?
All right. That's, I love scoops. So that's perfect.
But, you know, we've signed up Safaricom up in Kenya, Mozambique. We're moving into areas like Egypt, into the Congo, Zambia, Zimbabwe. Believe it or not. So we're doing quite a lot of business up into Africa. But really what we're also doing is expanding up into Europe. So we've got some big, big drives happening there. Big things happening in the telco space. So, you know, mobile private networks, MPN is a big driver for the telcos globally. And that really is sort of in remote areas, manufacturing areas, mining areas where they actually come and put down a network for you on-prem.
Right.
That's essentially to give you a spectrum of connectivity. And obviously from Vodafone's perspective, they have some big, big initiatives around that. In fact, they've standardized on us globally for their mining sector, MPN. So we're working very, very closely with them in terms of setting up a center of excellence here in South Africa, which is fantastic for us, which means that globally, people will come here to see what we are doing. It really will become an exhibition hub for the technology, for not only for us, but obviously for Vodafone.
Now, I was chatting to Shamil Jusuba a few weeks ago at Vodacom's annual results, and he was quite excited about some anti-theft, anti-crime technology that he's building into Vodacom's base stations. And he said, I absolutely have to go and talk to Nico because you guys apparently are playing quite a big role in that process. Now, he spoke about some of the old school, old tech ways that they're protecting their batteries, for example, like gluing them in and cementing them in and putting glass into the concrete to prevent criminals from stealing the stuff. But he mentioned to me as well that I should come and talk to you because you're doing some interesting work in the field of IoT and other types of sensors in the base stations to prevent theft. Are you able to go into that in some detail? Obviously, bearing in mind that you don't want to give away the tricks of the trade to the criminal syndicates, but are you able to maybe give us a bit of color on that?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, obviously, our biggest suggestion was, you know, put the glass into the resin. So, I mean, it's a big project for us. We're busy rolling out to all of the base stations inside of Vodacom right now, and obviously hoping to extend that into the group further.
Yeah.
And really looks at a spectrum. It looks at across the spectrum. If you look at a base station, you've got active equipment, passive equipment. You have access control, security, environmental monitoring. And then you have an interesting thing in South Africa where we have been able to take the almost all the existing technology that they've already had deployed into these base stations, being able to bring them into the platform, and then more importantly, really had a massive drive around energy savings. So if you look at a base station, obviously has a lot of equipment emitting quite a lot of heat. They have air conditions or cooling systems in the environment. And essentially what we've been able to do is between being able to have some intelligence at the edge, being able to intelligently switch between aircon control, free cooling, taking into consideration things like the ambient temperature externally and being intelligent in terms of how we cool, we've been able to effect 21.4% worth of savings on electricity consumption. So now you can imagine over 12, 13,000 sites, it's massive in terms of where we can take that. So, and that is one of 14 use cases that we're busy implementing, you know. So really what this is, it's looking to run the environment more efficiently, obviously set the stage for the transition into renewable energy, because we'll start seeing some of that taking place over time, and then combining all of this also to bring more security into that. So a lot of the issues that you have typically in these kind of environments, I'm not saying Vodacom specifically, but in this world is, you know, you have a lot of internal issues in terms of people having access, vandalizing, etc. So how do you manage that better? So we're bringing some really good technologies into play, which really piggyback off the Raptor and what we've done on IoT, and create intelligent connectivity between the user with a handset arriving at a site, being able to gain access through Bluetooth or similar types of technology, and then really being able to create that full sort of auditability, a digital auditability. And then on top of that, bringing in the physical aspects in terms of perimeter, you know, all of the security elements that one can combine with that. And remember, you know, a lot of these sites are remote. So your response time on certain of these, you know, it remains a challenge. And it's unfortunate, because I think it is a big challenge for our telcos. I mean, they are faced here locally with some challenges, which, you know, when we talk about it to the guys in Europe, it's like, okay, well, that sounds great, but we really don't have that problem here. You know?
Yes. Yes, that was, you're right. You're right, though. It was the energy savings that Shamil was so excited that I talked to you about, not the glass in glue, but some interesting interesting technologies that you guys are putting in there. There's no doubt, Nika, that IoT.next has been a hugely successful startup. Do you think you've achieved this against the odds here in South Africa? Was the funding and backing available to help South African tech startups succeed in the same way that you have?
Okay, so, I mean, there's two parts to the answer. The first one is, you know, success is, you know, for me, what is success? I think we have a long road to go before we get there. True success, I think for us, true success is being top three in the world globally from an IoT perspective. So I think it is relative. Although I am very grateful for the path that we are on, and I believe that we are making the right moves, and hopefully we'll continue to make the right moves to be able to achieve that.
Yeah.
I think the startup, I was very privileged in terms of being able to partner up with Talent 10. Mm-hmm. I think they were.
Who are they?
So they're an interesting bunch. I mean, it's a guy by the name of Wayne Fitzjohn. It's a private equity VC type of business. Very creative guys. They're not scared, because I think that's one of the things you need to have. You need to have. It is a podcast, right? So you need to have kahunas, when you're investing of steel. And I can attest to the fact that they have them. And so they're really an amazing, innovative bunch of business guys coming out of private equity and finance. And essentially what they've done is that, you know, they're creating a platform over there that really sees, I think, into the future. I think will become a major player in terms of unlocking local entrepreneurs. I think what makes Wayne and the team quite dynamic is the fact that they can look at a business and allow it to sort of move. Mm. And sometimes that is very challenging, because believe me, there were some times where things were really tight for us. Because, you know, you're bargaining on a deal, you know, and what people don't understand is it's not a normal business in this kind of environment where you're staying ahead of the pack. You're spending money on things that potentially only return value potentially in 18 to 24 months. So you're investing in the future. You're having to transact in the present. These two things aren't in sync. So your burn rate versus your what you're bringing into the business, these things aren't always in sync. And you know, it's not a perfect world. IoT was, I think, is moving out of its adolescent phase right now. I think it's been there for quite some time, but I think it's moving out of that quite quickly now. And I think having a partner, someone who can put money into the business and understand the complexity of building a business, and that it doesn't always just go 100% according to plan. Unfortunately, in our world, I mean, not unfortunately, the reality is I think more things went wrong than right. We managed to not make what we said we would do more times than not. And I mean, but the pendulum is now is turning. And but you know, we would sit down and we'd discuss, why is that? Is it just a case of we lost the deal to someone else? It's just been postponed. It's moving. You know, it's those kind of things that if you have a partner that needs to understand that. Otherwise, you stifle the growth. I mean, you know, we could have buttoned down the hatches on the second round of funding.
Yeah.
Not have, you know, not didn't have to do the deal with Vodacom if we didn't want, you know, we really didn't need to. We could have just gone potentially scale the business down and it could be a great little business here in South Africa. But it, when you have partners that see the bigger picture and they want to go that journey with you, it's very, very helpful.
Yes. Yeah, interesting.
I think we do. I think from a South African perspective, you know, we've got a lot of startups. It's vibrant. But I also think it goes beyond just funding the startup. It's about supporting the startup. And I think that's a challenge that we need to somehow get it over. I think large corporates are reticent or hesitant to back a startup, where if you go to San Francisco, it's Startup Valley. And most of the multinationals have CIOs or innovation people sitting in Silicon Valley, looking at the new technology that startups are developing and backing that technology. And I think that, Mr. Ray, is one of the tough areas that we have in South Africa. We've got amazing startup tech that's being born and birthed, but they kind of run out of steam, whether it's funding and whether it's support. I think if business sometimes is a little bit more willing to take a chance on innovative startup technology, you know, that would also help and stimulate that sector.
I wanted to ask about skills. We know across the ICT space that there's a skill shortage. What is the skill situation look like in the IoT space, and what work is IoT.next doing to develop that next generation of skills?
Yeah, so I mean, it is the skills. Skills is a problem, right? In certain instances, part of the problem is not that I don't believe we're getting enough people coming into the system. It's just so many people leaving. We have a lot of people leaving the country to go after a dollar and a pound. We have to come up with programs and scenarios where people actually want to stay. So if you look at South Africa, despite all the challenges that we have, I mean, all the other countries have the same challenges. Let me tell you, guys are earning, you know, entry-level salaries for Facebook up in Silicon Valley is anything between 150,000 and 180,000 pounds a year. Agreed. You can quickly do the math. It's a huge number. But you're paying $8,000 to $10,000 just to rent a little place, you know. So again, you know, people, you know, it is difficult from that perspective that you think you're competing with dollar. But your lifestyle and the way that we live in South Africa, I think, is really phenomenal. So I think it's incumbent on all of us to create programs and environments where people actually want to stay. Obviously, from our point of view, you know, I believe we're creating an environment for people where they can thrive. I think we have to make more effort in terms of that, in terms of wellness. So we have a team that really focuses on wellness. We call them angels in our business, and really looking into how do we create an aspirational workplace where, you know, we cater for people's individual needs as far as it makes sense. I think on top of that, you know, we have to be developing people, and you know, a lot of the IoT skills aren't necessarily being taught at university, but at the same token, we have a number of initiatives where we're partnering with a number of these tertiary institutions. We've set up an academy that we're currently busy building out with Vodacom, where we will be taking in not just postgrads, but also people from grade 10 that are showing potential. We want to get into that program where we start lifting people out of the communities. And, you know, I think that's the other challenge that we have as a country, is finding really good skills from previously disadvantaged areas. And part of the problem that you have with that is, you know, my kid at 6 years old gets his first PC. So by the time that he's out of matric, you know, he's well-versed in everything. Mm-hmm. These poor kids sit in townships and they don't have access to that type of technology. So they get great marks, but then they get into BSc computer science year one. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is like, what are you even talking about? So I think we have to get into that layer earlier so we can start familiarizing, socializing, so people can actually start understanding technology earlier. I don't believe it's just good enough dropping off a bunch of devices. I think what we have to do is have an intentional program where we start to change that. I mean, we're very passionate about it, and I mean, we should talk about it more. I think Francois is going to be on the Francois Fullscank will be on one of your podcasts talking around the academy and how we want to develop that, because I think it's a massive opportunity for South Africa and Africa. I mean, Africa is going to be a hub for digitization. So from that perspective, you know, I think South Africa could be an amazing feeder.
Well, I look forward to that discussion with Francois. We'll explore that in quite a lot more detail. But Nico, before I let you go, where do you see the future of IoT.next going? I mean, where do you see this business in, say, 5 years from now?
Okay. Thanks for that, Duncan. I think before I answer that, I think what we have to say is, where do we see the industry and where do we see business move? And I think what we see is, over the next 5 years, a massive drive globally in terms of digitization of business. We see the advent and introduction of forms of AI and machine learning and deep learning that we haven't seen before. I think we're moving into an economy that's super, super competitive. And from that perspective, you know, I think everybody is going to have to be looking to technology to improve their efficiencies, their productivity. And in terms of their customer experience, you know, it's all becoming so more immediate in terms of, I want something, I want it today, I want it tomorrow. Visibility into businesses where executives can make decisions almost in real time. Now, I mean, that sounds far-fetched, but I think we're moving into an environment where this data becomes more real time. And I think that changes the paradigm in terms of how we run our businesses, how we interact. And we even saw now with COVID, how did we run our businesses before and how are we running them now? I think what we see over the next 5 years is a massive shift in terms of how businesses are being run. At the heart of that sits IoT, because IoT lays the foundation for exposing that data. So IoT is a core fundamental. I mean, AI and machine learning has been around for ages.
Yeah.
It never came into its right because it never could access enough data at the right time and quality. IoT essentially will play is a foundational sort of layer in terms of being able to enable that. And I believe if IoT.next can understand that direction and that we can continue to build out our core capability in terms of exposing that in the right fashion and making it easier, more affordable, more accessible, then I think, you know, we get to rise with the tide. So I think, to answer your question, I mean, I'm super excited about the company, more so than ever. We're expanding. We're hiring in a time where most people are contracting. We must really have to increase our headcount by 50 to 70% this year again.
Wow.
Yeah, we're looking at 5x to 7x on revenues for the last 12 months. So it's aggressive and very, very exciting, regardless of the fact that we're in sort of a tough time. So the next 5 years, hopefully you and I, you know, I don't know if you'll start using the shampoo that I do, in the next 5 years, I think IoT.next, global player, you know, in multiple markets and leading from the front.
Always great to chat to you, Nico. Nico Steyn is the co-founder and CEO of IoT.next. Thanks for making the time today.
Duncan, thanks so much. Have a good one.